If you're saved, you belong to Christ. You don't belong to you anymore. You didn't join Christianity. You enlisted, as Larry Wheeler used to preach. When you enlist, you're no longer your own. You belong to whoever you enlisted with. You have been purchased. So if you are a Christian, you can't sell it because it doesn't belong to you. But if you do not belong to Christ, you still can't sell your soul to the devil because guess what? You still are not your own. You already belong to him. You can't sell him what he already owns. And Scripture is clear that you either belong to Christ or you belong to the devil. Jesus told the people, you are of your father. He says, I'm from above, you're from beneath. You are of your father, the wicked one. He is a murderer. He's been a murderer from the beginning. He is the father of lies. Luke 11:21 says this. Jesus is talking about delivering a person from Satan's clutches. This is what he says. He says, when a strong man, I know we got some strong men in here. Bill Cummings, Bill, would you mind just, I mean, could you just, you know, just for a second, just a little bicep, brother. Go ahead, just roll that sleeve up there. Stand up, go ahead. Just one arm will do, just one arm. Greensboro, you better tremble. Thank you, brother, I owe you one. And not to draw any parallel between whom Jesus is talking about and my brother Bill, man. Bill's a solid Christian. When a strong man, fully armed, guards his own palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he comes, I guess I should have picked Bill second. I don't know. I'm out of people now. But when a stronger than he comes and overcomes him, he takes from him all his armor in which he trusted and divides his spoils. Who is the strong man in that passage? Satan. Jesus is referring there to Satan. When Satan, the strong man who was fully armed, guarding his own palace, his goods are in peace. Do you know who his goods are? The unsaved. They belong to him. And he guards them with every weapon of hell that he can muster to keep them his, to keep them in bondage and slavery to him. Jesus came to set us free from that. But until he comes and sets us free, who do we belong to? Satan. Let that sink into your soul. You either belong to Christ or Satan. There is no middle ground. We are not our own. We are either sold under sin or we are redeemed by the blood. The devil stands poised to seize them. Why? Because they belong to him. And it is only the pleasure and mercy of God that keeps them from being completely devoured and dragged into hell by him. Demons are very, very real. I have seen demons. I have seen the effects of demons. And if you go into some third world countries, you will be amazed at the power of the demonic there because they embrace all of that kind of demonic worship. They're eaten up with it. And rest assured, if you check out of this world without Christ, you will check into a world filled with demonic oppression. So, God is able to send them to hell. Sinners deserve to go to hell. Sinners are already under the sentence of hell. They are already the object of God's hellish wrath. Number five, the devil stands poised to seize them and torment them in hell. Number six, they are by nature children of hell. I know that Oprah says, oh, we're all children of God. I'm sorry, sweetheart, it's not true. You are either a child of God or you are a child of the devil, and that's Jesus that said that. The soul of an unregenerate man is so evil, if it were not for the social restraints that God puts upon us, we would amaze ourselves at the depths of evil that we could sink to. Now, most of us don't want to do those kinds of evil. One, because as we were growing up, we would get a bad spanking if we did. Go be made to sit in the corner or, you know, have, you know, privileges taken away. And as we grow up, you know, we learn to appreciate the respect of our peers. We don't want to be thought of as some degenerate. You know, we want to be able to get a job and have a living. We want to be able to stay out of jail. I saw the documentary Scared Straight. I don't want to go to jail. And so I behave myself. And there are all kinds of social restraints to keep people from acting like total, you know, Insanity. But did you know when those social restraints are removed, it is amazing the depths that man will sink to. You go to a place in a time of war where there's no more government reigning in power. You take a city that's under siege, and there's no government there, and the military is going from house to house, and they're blowing up buildings, and people are hiding in cellars to try to keep alive. In those settings, there is often absolute and utter chaos. And when armies have gone into cities, sometimes the depths of depravity that they have gone to in sacking those cities and the horrible things that they do to the people in there is beyond description. How many people know that right before World War II broke out, Japan went into China? And there's something known as the Rape of Nanking, where they killed 300,000 civilians in one city in a matter of several days. And they raped the women and they bayoneted the babies. They would throw them in the air and catch them on bayonets. That is unthinkable. I can't, in my wildest imaginations, I can't imagine a person doing that. And yet it was going on all over. It was one of the most despicable wartime crimes of our century. I don't know how you could get worse than that. But you take those social restraints away. You give people absolute power to do whatever their wicked, unregenerated heart wants to do. And there is no end to what a person will do. They are by nature children of hell. And it says that in Ephesians 2:3. The Apostle Paul, talking about before he got saved, he said, "We too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind. And we were by what? By nature, our own being. We were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." That's why God's love for us is so amazing, that He would give His Son to die for a sinner like me. How amazing is that love? How invincible is that love, man? That's why I fell so head over heels in love with Jesus. Because when God showed me my sins that day, as I was kneeling in my sister's apartment before I went to that crusade, and I knew I deserved hell with every fiber of my being, and yet I went and I heard about a Jesus who would come and die and give His life for me, I fell head over heels in love with a man who would do that. Number 7, the lack of an imminent threat does not secure them from death and hell. Let me say that again. The lack of an imminent threat does not secure them from death and hell. This is what Jonathan Edwards said. He said, "The unseen," I love this. This is so cool, man. You guys are going to be blown away. "The unseen, unthought of ways and means by which people suddenly go out of the world are innumerable and inconceivable. Unconverted men walk over the pit of hell on a rotten covering, and there are countless places in this covering that are so weak that the covering will not bear their weight, and these places are not seen." Can you imagine that? As horrible a nightmare as hell would be, walking over the pit of hell on wood that is rotted out in various places where there are spots where it will not hold your weight and you cannot tell one place from the other. This truth is so profound and so true that they're even doing television shows about it today. On cable TV, on Spike TV, there's a show called 1,000 Ways to Die. Anybody ever heard of that? Sarah? Okay, cool. Whatever. You don't have to have cable TV. You can look it up on the internet. Spike TV, 1,000 Ways to Die, man. I'm telling you, it will blow your mind. It is a documentary that tells true stories about the bizarre ways that people check out of this life. There are some bizarre ways that people get killed that they never saw coming in a million years. Young people, old people, in between people. 1,000 Ways to Die. Let me give you a couple examples. There was a plane crash. About a half a dozen guys died in a plane crash one day. You know what the cause of the plane crash was? Scuba diving. Yeah. All right, what happened was this guy took a bunch of his buddies out scuba diving. And you know, they went down there, and you know, when you scuba dive, you can't come up really quick or you might get what? The bends. That's right. You're inhaling nitrogen through your tank, and that nitrogen gets in your blood, and it stays in a liquid form because you're under pressure. But if you get into a place where the water is not pressuring you and that pressure releases, if you get there too soon, that nitrogen can bubble up in your blood, and those bubbles can cause excruciating pain, disorientation, dizziness. Horrible experience. Now, these guys were experienced divers, so they knew better than to do something stupid like that. So they took their time. They came up very slowly. And they came out of the water, and they were great. And they went to have something to eat, and they were carrying on. And they were fairly rich. This guy that took them out had just, in fact, bought himself a nice little birthday present. He bought himself a Cessna plane. And he was so anxious to get back into his birthday present, so he got the guys in there, and they got in the plane, and he couldn't wait to take off, and so they got up in the plane, they started taking off and enjoying the thing as they rose higher and higher in the air. It was not a pressurized cabin, so what happened to the pressure? It dropped. They forgot the cardinal rule that you never scuba dive and fly a plane on the same day, and the higher they got into the air, the more that nitrogen began to bubble up in their blood, and they became in excruciating pain. They became dizzy and disoriented. They could no longer fly, and the guy crashed the plane. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? After taking every precaution. Give you another example. Guy died in a dryer. Commercial dryer. I mean, a big old, they had a couple of these things, big old, you know, hunk of a dryer. It was a commercial industrial version. It was like 20 feet deep, about 10 feet wide, and he was a maintenance guy. He was on contract to maintain these dryers, and his buddy turned off the wrong dryer. So the guy climbs into the dryer. He starts messing around with the wires and everything. All of a sudden, he turns it on. The door seals shut. The dryer starts to spin, and the temperature inside rises to 200 degrees. And his buddy suddenly realizes when he hears all this thing, he's like, oh my gosh, I turned off the wrong one. And he ran out there 6 minutes later, and it was too late. His buddy had already been toasted. And do you know that 20 people every year, approximately 20 people every year, die in dryers? And do you know, guess what age group? Anybody? Thank you. 20 teenagers die every year from climbing into a dryer and turning the stupid thing on, never imagining in their wildest dreams that they would become toast. Wrinkle-free, tumbled toast. One more example. There was a woman, a pretty young woman, who had had just horrible luck in her relationships with men. Just one after the other was just a nightmare. She finally thought, you know, this is just, I just can't go on like this. And so one night, she was at a bar. She decided she would try lesbianism. And there was a woman there who she knew was involved in those kinds of things. And they started drinking, and they got, you know, pretty three sheets to the wind. And they decided they would go to this woman's apartment and initiate this young lady into this lifestyle, just to try it out, sort of an experiment. And so as they were walking to her apartment from the bar, she took off her stiletto heels and began walking barefoot. It had rained earlier that day, and they came to the crosswalk, and there was a pool of water sitting there at the corner of the crosswalk. And where the crosswalk light was, they had had some maintenance on it recently, and there were some wires that they apparently had not really shored up or put back the right way, and they were exposed, and they were hanging down into this puddle. So the woman had taken her heels off, and she stepped down into the puddle, and she was okay at that point, but because she was drunk, she had to steady herself, and when she stuck out her hand to steady herself against the steel light pole, she completed the circuit and was instantly toast. Fried her on the spot. 1,000 ways to die. Never saw it coming in a million years. Who would imagine? Yet in the moment, in the unseen moment, the unimagined moment, in the prime of their life, cut down without any hope, without any chance to repent, without any chance to change, without any opportunity to circumvent their fate. 1,000 ways to die. So Jonathan Edwards here is not just, you know, he's not just being some mean, you know, red-faced preacher. He's saying, know that we have no control. We do not know how much time we have or what it might happen in the next moment that could take us into eternity. Number 8, There is nothing they can do in their own effort to ultimately keep them from death and hell.